Lake Effect Weekend continues now. I'm Bonnie North.
And I'm Mitch Teich. Photography has always been a combination of art and science, even as the techniques of making a photograph have evolved. An exhibition in Madison called Unseen wants viewers to think about the history of photography as not only about art and image making, but also how it's connected to the histories of science, alchemy, and magic. According to Sarah Ann Carter of the Chipstone Foundation, it's the processes we don't see that give us the final images we do.
Unseen was created by Carter's students in the Introduction to Museum Studies class at UW-Madison, and it's currently on view at the Chazen Museum of Art. Esalt Gillespie and Tori Yonkers, who are both English department doctoral students, were part of a team that created the educational text for the photographs. In this edition of Radio Chipstone, Carter tells contributor Jennifer Fields how she and her students give viewers a peek into the process of fixing image onto paper, metal, and glass.
I think of this project as building a scaffold that really allowed my students, who came from diverse backgrounds, a mixture of undergraduate and graduate students, a mixture of makers, there were several MFAs in the class, as well as students who typically work as writers or close readers or even scientists, there's a computer scientist in the class. I think of my role as building a scaffold that allowed that very intellectually diverse group of students to come together to think about what they could bring to the creation of an exhibition project. And in order to do that, I worked with colleagues here at the Chazen last summer to select a really broad and big group of photographs that we could then draw from and think about. So we were already starting with a collection of objects, any number of which could be transformed into a fascinating exhibition. But starting with that broader collection really gave us the power within that seminar to make decisions, to ask questions, and to allow the students' curiosity and creativity to shape an exhibition. And then over the course of the semester, the students worked in teams. And in working in teams, it allowed them to really focus in on some aspect of exhibition creation that allowed them to have ownership over part of the project, and also to really dive deeply and be creative about that aspect of the project for which they were responsible. So as in any museum, there was a group of students focused on education. There's a group of students focused on design, and there's a group of students focused on the very important registrarial work, the work of organizing objects, the work of understanding where these objects were coming from. So each student was on one of those three teams, and together we all had curatorial responsibilities, and we're able to work towards the larger argument and story of this exhibition. But then, of course, that story has to be unfolded through creative design. It has to be unfolded through careful and detailed registrarial work, and then it has to be shared and amplified through the work of the education team. And so working in that way, we were able to create this pretty exciting project together.
So Esalt, you come from a literary background, correct? How did you get drawn into this wonderful world of material culture in its exhibit?
So in my work as a graduate student, I'm also very invested in the study of images and visual culture. And my minor here at the University of Wisconsin-Madison is in visual culture. But while being familiar with the theoretical aspect of visual culture, I hadn't had much chance since I came to graduate school to engage the material aspect of it. And this is a class that really allowed me to do that. I was part of the education team, so we came from a variety of different backgrounds and different expertise, but what we were really trying to do with this diverse set of objects and interests that we had in the classroom was try and put together an educational program that would spark curiosity, that would allow people to engage with these objects in new ways. And we really tried not necessarily to be didactic or to tell people about what they should think about this exhibition, but about how they can interact with these pieces and apply them to their own interests and their own lives.
So Tori, you also worked on this exhibit. Which role did you play? What team were you on?
I was actually also on the education team. Esalt and I particularly worked on a lot of the mission statements and the sort of argumentative text that is going to be featured all around this exhibit, and we had others working on putting together a panel of some of the artists that are actually going to be featured in this exhibit, which is very exciting because within curating this exhibit, we tried to get some local artists as well to be involved in the process of making our argument.
So what is your mission statement?
Well, so Ethel and I sort of tag-teamed the mission statement, and it's focused firstly on the sort of alchemical, magical aspects of the historical process of photography. And then the second bit is sort of considering how contemporary artists have recuperated or reused or somehow politically inflected these historical processes to make a different sort of argument in this, in this contemporary moment. So, for example, we have John Horvath, who has sort of recuperated the process of tintype making, and we actually had the wonderful opportunity to go visit John Horvath in Milwaukee and see his process in real time. And so there's a really interesting argument, especially in the piece that John Horvath has contributed to our exhibit, in sort of using this almost toxic kind of process in order to convey some sort of message about, like the trash around Milwaukee, right? There's like broken bottles and things like that. And
that also speaks to another dichotomy that we're working with, which is that between old and new. So whenever we were presented with these historic photographs, some of the processes that we were looking at, such as daguerreotypes or tintypes or even silhouettes, were pretty alien and difficult to relate to in terms of how they were made, who was making them, and the labor involved. It takes a long time to sit for these or to even conjure these photographs in a dark room. So we were thinking about these labor-intensive, slightly opaque processes, and also trying to look at the work of some contemporary artists that are reimagining and possibly rehabilitating these processes in the eyes of or from a contemporary standpoint.
So then, Tori, what do you say to people, or how has this changed the way that you interact with photography? Or did it change your interaction with your everyday use of photography?
In our first iterations of thinking through some things that the education team might do for the opening reception was we were trying to figure out a way to recreate the quote-unquote selfie, but in a way that would sort of make the sitter be there for the amount of time that it would take for a daguerreotype to process and expose. So,
Tori, that's mean. That's just torturous.
Well, I don't think that we were necessarily thinking of making them sit for as long as it does take for a daguerreotype to develop. But, if you say you sit in a certain spot for even a minute, especially in this day and age, that is such a long period of time to sit for any sort of photograph, in the age of digital photography, in the age of Instagram and stuff like that. And so even just considering the concept of not being able to move, not being able to smile because you can't, you have to keep a straight face because you can't really move your face, right? So just the
torturous.
Yeah.
That's terrible.
And we were even considering having a neck brace brought in so that you couldn't actually move your head. And so that was sort of a historical thing that they would use so that people wouldn't move their heads while they were sort of exposing the film when they were taking pictures back then.
Sarah, help me with this.
One thing that is so interesting to me about Tori's description of trying to help visitors understand what it might have felt like to actually sit for a long exposure is that we can connect it to our experience in the class of having our tintypes taken by John Horvath. So we went to his studio, and he actually took portraits of the class, and those portraits, I should say, are featured in the exhibition as well. But when we had to take those portraits, we had to sit very still only for several seconds. I think perhaps it was 10 seconds for that process, given the amount of light that he had. And even those 10 seconds created all sorts of strange effects in those images. And if you look closely at the class portraits, you can see the way we tried to be very stoic so we wouldn't move. Like, my class looks somewhat mean in those pictures. They're very nice people because they're very, very serious, because it's easier to be serious if you can't move, right? To sort of remove emotion from your face. And that created, I think, a sense of empathy and connection with some of the historic sitters as well, because it allowed us to imagine what might it have felt like what did it feel like, perhaps, to be totally still for that? And so that, you know, fed into one iteration of a possible program. And that was a part of a making experience that helped us see images differently and that could then connect to ways of trying to interpret and talk about and share that experience.
So Esau, your background, again, is in literature and in writing. How did this experience change the way you talked about these things, the way you wrote about them?
Well, sitting that long for a photograph really made me think about that theme of what is unseen. And in our case, what was unseen was like fits of the giggles, awkwardness, feeling not necessarily that your hair is at the right angle or that you're put together, trying to not jostle each other. So just those little everyday snippets of like being human and knowing that someone else is watching you is an effective experience that maybe you don't experience to the same level when someone is just snapping a picture of you with their phone. So that is an experience that we wanted to capture in the way that we're thinking about unseen. What is beyond the camera's lens? What's beyond the frame? And what experiences might we think differently about when we consider that aspect of the work?
Material culture contributor Jennifer Fields curates the Radio Chipstone series. The project is funded by the Chipstone Foundation, a decorative arts foundation whose mission is preserving and interpreting their collection, as well as stimulating research and education in the decorative arts.
This week, Jennifer spoke with Sarah Ann Carter of the Chipstone Foundation and two of her students, Esalt Gillespie and Tori Yonkers. Their exhibit, Unseen, is on view at the Chazen Museum through mid-April.